never get to the point that you're just great and you're always going to be perfect. Every experience is going to challenge you in a new way. And what makes you ultimately successful is being willing to face that challenge head on, grow from it, learn from it, to always retain some amount of humility in that way.
Welcome to the Disruptive Innovators Champions of Digital Business podcast, where IT and digital leaders from around the world talk about their careers, their inspiration, and their vision for the future of digital business. I'm your host, David Wright. The world of digital business is evolving faster than ever, and I want this to be a place where digital business champions create a village to band together and help each other navigate the ever-changing terrain. Disruptive Innovators features conversations with CIOs and digital leaders from around the world, diving into their personal backstory, career, their current role, trends they've been seeing, and their vision for the future, personally, professionally, and otherwise. This podcast is made for people who are seeing how quickly the digital business landscape is evolving. Those who recognize that it takes a village of trusted advisors to navigate this ever-changing terrain. People who enjoy listening to high-level discussions surrounding what it means to be a leader, real-world examples of challenges faced, and industry-specific strategies leveraged to create exceptional business outcomes. This episode is brought to you by Disruptive Innovations, a leading tech consulting firm that helps enterprise organizations with their IT strategy, process optimization, and workflow improvement. Contact them and find out more at disruptiveinnovations.net.
Good afternoon, friends. David Wright here, and I am your host of the Disruptive Innovators Champions of Digital Business podcast. And this afternoon, depending on where you're tuning in from, I am lucky enough to be joined by Cheryl Johnson. Cheryl, pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know it's been a little ways in the making, so glad we're doing it. For those of our listeners who may not be familiar, can you just tell everyone a little bit about your current role?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing, because it might be a little confusing, I know some of my former colleagues are just like, who is the Cheryl Johnson person? So I was Cheryl Poro for a long time. And yeah, I recently went back to my maiden name. So now I'm back to being Cheryl Johnson. So familiar to me, but unfamiliar to most of the people I've worked with in my career. So I go by both. And currently, I am Chief Product and Technology Officer at a company called BetterWorks. And at BetterWorks, we do large enterprise continuous performance management, talent management, really looking to disrupt that part of the experience for employees, right? And it's something I'm super passionate about and why I'm at BetterWorks. But some of those antiquated ways of doing performance management, those yearly performance reviews, just aren't great experiences for employees. So that's what we're here to transform. And yeah, I lead product design, engineering, et cetera, and having a great time.
Love it. Yeah, I'm excited to dig more into that because we've been doing a lot of stuff, particularly in healthcare with workforce management and performance management, especially in access. Excited to hear what you're up to. I know you're at Thrive too, which I think Thrive's a super cool company, and Salesforce, and we'll get all into it. Cheryl, actually, before we dig into anything though, I like to just ask my listeners, what would be, and I'm sure we'll cover a few pieces of advice, but one piece of actionable advice you might look to leave everyone with today?
I think one of the threads that really weaves through all of my story just throughout my career is embracing my uniqueness. And really my advice to others is in embracing your uniqueness. I think trying to look like someone, be like someone, compare yourself to someone isn't a good recipe for success or happiness, right, in life. And I struggled with that early in my career. I didn't see myself at all where I am today as a professional early in my career, and maybe set my sights a little low in the beginning. But also I was a bit of a rebel, a little outside of the box. And it wasn't until I landed in Silicon Valley that I felt like I could truly be me and be successful. And there's something magical, I think, especially back when I first landed here in the mid-90s, and I jumped on the first kind of internet boom in 1997. It just felt, okay, I can just show up, be me, be successful. And it was a real eye-opener, having come from the East Coast, which is a bit more conservative. So that's been my message. When I do a little coaching on the side, really passionate about giving back and trying to help that next generation of folks grow in their career. And that's always been my message. You can only be you.
That's that. I definitely, for many years, especially in my like teens and then, but in, even into my 20s and early on in my career, found myself like wanting to be what you wanted me to be, right? And I remember even in high school, I'd be friends with, because I played football, so I was friends with the jocks, and I had friends with the bad kids, and I had friends with the nerds. And it wasn't until it took what it took to find myself and who I was as a person. But I couldn't agree more that I truly don't really mind what people think of me today, because I think it, what it was, like, I didn't love myself either. It took me a while to learn to love myself. And that's that, we don't have enough time to get into how that came to pass, but
you don't know how much I love the fact that we have gone there that deep, that's quick. Like, it totally makes my day, because that's what I found in my life and career is, and when, for me, and especially the experience of work has been so transformational. And that's why I'm so passionate about work can be such an amazing catalyst for people. If it's the right environment and you are taking the right approach, it can be so transformational and it can be deeply meaningful. And so I've worked with individuals in their careers who struggle with some major personal challenges, and then work forced them to deal with that, because you're just not going to be able to be successful or pull it off, right? If you're not able to deal with that. And so, yeah, it's just, it's profound. And I'm glad we got there and got there fast. And I am with you on that one. I think the whole first part of my journey was like both me trying to be the bad girl rebel and rebel for my parents, and then me trying to be the good girl and please my parents. And it wasn't until I just came to terms with all that and realized it's my life, my one life to live, and I got to go live it. And that it all of that tension fell off and became a non-issue.
I get it. One of the things that I've had the privilege of experiencing through doing the podcast is learning that, like, I really appreciate women and men and leaders that are just vulnerable and can share about their experiences, good, bad, and indifferent. And because another thing that I've learned is that I don't know what is good or bad, right? Like, good or bad, like some of the darkest things that I've experienced ended up being the catalyst for my biggest moments of personal and professional growth, right? So I think it would be selfish not for me to share that with other people, right? Whether it's broadly in a forum like this or just a one-on-one kind of like mentor mentee type, I have to be mindful of that anyway.
You have to be cognizant of how you're delivering the message and how that might be taken given the context of the situation. And I think as long as you're thinking about that, and clearly if you're with someone one-on-one, they're struggling, sharing your struggles can be, and what the struggles you've encountered in the past is really powerful. Because a lot of times people look at you and go, wow, I'd really love to do what you've done, et cetera. How do you do it? I don't think I'm capable. And showing them that if you could see who I was 20 years ago and,
oh, right, yeah, exactly.
I'm shocked when I think about it.
Same. And if I would have got everything that I thought I wanted, I would have sold myself short. So, well, Cheryl, I want to hear more about this journey of yours. So how you started out, we talked about you moving to Silicon Valley in the 90s, which is, I always get such a kick out of that era. Like, I imagine like what it would have been like, but interested to learn about your career and how you landed where you are today.
Funny, because the whole reason why I ended up in Silicon Valley in the mid 90s is just funny in its own right when I think back. But I went to undergrad, I did chemical engineering as an undergrad, and I met a boyfriend who was a civil engineer alongside, and he was in a punk rock band. So we went to school in upstate New York. He was going to get his master's in Colorado. So I had gotten a job as a chemical engineer in upstate New York straight out of college. I was working in this paper mill. It was a wild experience. It was like built in the 1800s. There were depths to this facility that were so scary. Like every time I would have to go down four levels deep to get a sample, I was just like, okay, when are the creatures going to come out and get me? It was just insane. Never mind some of the characters I met while I was working there. I was not adverse to just like, I quit and moving to Colorado, which is what I did to be with him. And then he and I and the whole band, so it was a 5-piece punk band, all moved to San Francisco in the mid 90s. So that was the impetus for me to end up in California, right? It was not professional at all. And I got a chemical engineering job when I first landed here after some time. It took a little while, but managed to land a job at it was a small outfit that did silicon chip manufacturing waste treatment systems, which was fun. And so I was working the back lots of like Silicon Graphics and AMD and Sun Microsystems installing or troubleshooting these waste treatment systems. Felt badass, if you will, for me. I was always an element. I was a punk rocker, right? You can't see them, but I have sleeves of tattoos that I got way back then. So that was definitely just a part of my identity. And so I'm there, I'm doing my thing. And literally I'm hearing about this internet boom, these tech companies and how cool they are. If I got into the office at 8:02, I got yelled at by my boss's boss, even though I was working way past whatever an end time would be. So that bothered me. And I was hearing like, oh, these tech companies, you can roll in whenever. People roll in at 10, 11, and then you just work as long as you want to, as long as you need to work, and they give you free snacks. And so I was like, I want in on that. And that was how I jumped over to software and technology and got my first job at a startup, and it just didn't never look back, honestly. It was a good run. So did a bunch of startups in the early years and then landed at a place. And this is what happens when you're in an area like Silicon Valley, is you start to come across a lot of the same folks. You start to work with a lot of the same folks. I landed in this place called Digital Think that was an e-learning company for the enterprise way back when. It was a formative experience for me. I spent 4.5 years there. I started as a lead engineer, left as a director. And it was there that a number of people had been going to Salesforce. And it was very early days at Salesforce. No name recognition. No one knew what Salesforce was. And in fact, some of my former Digital Think colleagues would call me and be like, you need to come interview. And I'm like, Salesforce? What? No, thank you. And then I finally was convinced to come check it out. And then it was pretty clear. One of the things I had to do as part of the interview process was look at the product and have a point of view on some of the technical aspects of it. And when I started digging into the product and it was the early days of the Salesforce platform, I was blown away because I hadn't seen anything like that, especially as a service, right, on the internet. I had come from the world of you had your room with all your equipment where you ran all your systems, right. Your internal systems.
What year was that when you were first interviewing there, give or take?
It was 2005. I joined fall 2005. Wow. So it would have been, there was a few hundred people. We were all on two floors of One Market Street. I spent 7.5 years in that building while I was there. Yeah, it was, I could see product. Wow, this is mind blowing. I want to be involved in this. And then I started to learn about Mark, the Benioff. And I was like, okay, this guy isn't just trying to build a startup and sell it and pocket a nice amount of change. He wants to do something big. And so that was really compelling to me as an individual who tends to like, especially at that time, I just put everything of me, all that intensity I put into like punk rock. And one of the other things I was into in those days was kickboxing. I was a Muay Thai kickboxer. So I had stopped doing that by the time I joined Salesforce. But all of that kind of energy and intensity I've been putting into these aspects of my personal life, I had all of a sudden just shifted and put into my work. And I joined Salesforce. And I think it was this mix of the right place at the right time, because that company, the whole time I was there, it was just doubling in size, growing and growing. So it was an intense experience. And when you're in that kind of place, there's no room for work about work, right? Or fake work or whatever I like to call it. You are just, it's all about delivery and impact and execution. because it just that it's called, that's what's called for. It was an amazing run. I had a 13-year run there. Started again as a lead engineer. One of the other interesting things is at Digital Think, I was a director, but I took a couple steps back. And a lot of people around me are like, what are you doing? And I was like, okay, I'm a big fish in a little pond. I'm going to be a smaller fish in a bigger pond. But I saw the opportunity. I did come in a couple levels below, but quickly I was getting promoted every year. I was just growing along with the business, right? As the business grew, I grew because it was just, I was hungry for it. I wanted to be impactful. Yeah. So that was, it was a great run, left as an SVP, and have since been in C-suite at startups.
Oh, super cool. What would you say, it's just really cool experience. I admire that. What would you say is one of the most important things that you learned, especially I imagine there's just so much stuff like being involved in so many startups, but like that you learned over the course of your journey. And if you think about kind of the moments in life before learning it and after learning it, just be curious of one thing that comes to mind.
Funny, because I have two things. So let me think of which one I think is.
No, you could share both, please.
I'm going to share both. I love that. So one is, one of the things, especially in those days, right? I think the one lesson is from my Salesforce days and the other is from my startup, C-suite startup. At Salesforce, it was like, I was always, the way I like to describe it, over my skis a little bit. And I was always leaning into, okay, this new opportunity or role, okay, this scares the hell out of me, but I'm going to do it. And I got used to just always every year and a half, 2 years being scared. And like and the lesson is you don't have to be ready. You just have to be courageous and you just have to be willing to take a risk. And that for me, and you don't want to be always ahead of your, like over your skis in the state of anxiety or whatever. But every couple of years, that jolt, right? To your point, it's those challenging moments that create you. Create who you are.
It's true. And I think for me, and I've talked to a number of leaders about like fear of failure and imposter syndrome, which are both common feelings or were common feelings for me when I'd be flying over my skis, right? But I've found that in moving through that with courage, right, time and time again, then it goes away because you realize, holy cow, I can actually do this with the help of colleagues and a therapist and other stuff. But it's true, right? And I was able to grow into my own self-worth and be right-sized. That's the way I like to look at it. But
I like that. And it is so good for you to be honest there too, because I am, when I talk to folks and that in those moments, and when I'm coaching someone who's going through that, they're in the pit and trying to claw their way out, I never go it alone. I usually have a coach and a therapist. It's a two-team effort, and I don't even want to say the word because it is required. There's just no way you alone in your head are going to figure it all out. Having someone or others to bounce challenges off of or gain insight from is so critical. And so absolutely. And I've always been so grateful that I've been in this position, right, of privilege where I can afford these things and be able to bring this stuff on, because not everyone can. And that's why, for example, I try to do some kind of pro bono coaching mentee work, because not everyone has that, right? And it's really hard to go it alone when you know how it is up in here. It can get way more treacherous than real life, I think.
Absolutely. And was there a second thing? I interrupted you.
You didn't. I don't feel like you interrupted me, but there was a second thing. And it's interesting because it keys off a little bit of what you were talking about. And that is, in those days, and I think it was a part of it is just this human development and growth, but at this point, I do not fear hard work professionally, but I don't let fear drive my hard work. And in the past, it was driven by fear and anxiety. Like deep down, if I don't wake up every day and work my tail off, I'm going to end up a failure. and homeless or whatever, right? This was the back of my head. So it was fear driven, and that most definitely led to burnout. I had a whole burnout experience, and it's partly why I ended up at Thrive, because it was working to combat that. But now I've since recovered, right? And I'm at the point where I don't fear hard work. I love hard work. I'm in a phase of it right now at BetterWorks, and it's invigorating. And I'm so having so much fun. And it's not easy by any stretch. I've had to do some really hard things, right? Navigating a startup, and especially these days, when I think back to what it was like, and like that whole time I was at Salesforce, it was just, everything was pretty hunky-dory and it was growth. Very different situation than what we're dealing with now. It's a lot, just ever since the pandemic, it's been completely tumultuous. So leading in these times absolutely requires that you are not driven from fear, because it would be crippling.
I love that. And it's interesting because I had a very similar experience, and I was being driven. So both these experiences, being driven by fear, not being driven by fear, both in running Disruptive Innovators and Disruptive Innovations. So the work even, or the circumstances, didn't really change that much. It was a perspective shift that I had at some point. And because now I would say in the latter half of in the last 3 years, let's call it, I'm actually busier. I'm doing more work than I had ever done before, when I was so far up my own ass, just, oh my God, I'm so busy. What am I going to do? All of that. And now it's more, it's just different. I love the work so much more, and it can be challenging. It's hard. You said it's hard work, right? But it's not driven by fear.
Yeah,
it's not by fear.
And that's how you can find joy in it, when you're driven by, and I do think there is a benefit to being either the CEO of your own business or in the C-suite, right? You have a lot more kind of autonomy over your day, although your schedule is sometimes out of your hands, but otherwise. But I do try to extend that within my organization. Everyone should be a kind of CEO of what they own, right? So that they feel like they have that autonomy as well, that some control over what their day looks like and what they like, how they accomplish the goals we're setting out to do. So I try to extend that as much as possible. And I do think that some roles, that's harder to have. I think engineering, product design, is very creative endeavors. There's a lot of creativity there. So there's a lot of room to really do challenging but gratifying work. And I found in my career, the more challenging, often the more gratifying for folks.
I agree. Yeah. The pace that we're on now, like that moment, right? The 4X moment it's crazy trying to figure out how to scale something. So I just identify with the experience you're having, because we're like in it right now. But it's cool. What about a time, Cheryl, that you either had a project fail, or you had a personal or professional hardship, like a time that, like I had mentioned, that kind of catalyst for growth, like something that happened, but you ultimately took away a lesson from it, or something that helped impact your view, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, that a bit of that, when that shift happened of the driven by fear to not fearing, you know, the hard work, was all around that burnout moment that I experienced. So while I was at Salesforce, and I've told this story a few times, but I guess it's worth repeating because it was pretty pivotal in my life. But I had walked into my boss's office and quit. And at the time, I'm sole breadwinner for the family. So I had one daughter, husband at the time, and he was taking care of her. So I was sole breadwinner. I don't even think I talked to anyone about it. I had just hit this point and I wasn't getting help. I was just trying to navigate it on my own, because I had been successful. I had been like, all the right things had been happening in my career for so long. And then I finally hit this wall, and I really frankly didn't know what to do about it, how to handle it. And all I could think in the moment was to quit. And thankfully, my boss's boss at the time was like, No, I'm not going to accept your resignation. It doesn't seem like you're doing okay. Take some time off. And it was right around this time. It was a little bit earlier. And so he told me to take the month of December off. It was like a quiet month for us. We didn't make any changes over the holidays. And it was like end of fiscal year for a lot of customers at Salesforce. So we never did releases. We never did anything big. So it was the only like lull in what was like a pretty hectic pace there. So it was perfect timing. So I took the month off. And then I reached out to a friend of mine who is worked with folks on the fringes, maybe coming out of drug addiction or experiencing homelessness, these kinds of things. So she was really knew a lot. And I reached out to her and was just like, I need help. What do I do? And she gave me 5 things to do. And I went and did those, a lot of those things, and some of them stuck. And that was, it was all of that. It was digging out of that experience. And then what was so amazing is I had been interviewing for a new role within the company. It was the role I ended up getting. And at the time, I just thought there's no way. When I first expressed interest in the role, the individual who was doing the initial vetting of individuals said, you're about half of what we're looking for. And I was like, okay. And I'm thinking in my head, maybe the important half, I don't know, we'll see. So I really didn't think I was going to get it. I wasn't hinging on it, right? And then while I'm on that month break, I find out I'm one of 2 finalists for the role. Yeah. So if I had quit, there would be a good chance I wouldn't have got that role. And that role was like the most phenomenal 4.5 years of my career. It was amazing. And because I had spent this month just, I had a meditation person I worked with. I did course therapy, of course, prioritizing my health and being really making sure I'm always at this point in my life. I know every minute I spend exercising, I gain back in 5 minutes. So I have no qualms in working out because it just makes me a superhuman. And I always tell that to people I work with, please do not let your Peloton collect dust. Use that thing. No, I have a walking pad that I use when I'm on Zoom meetings. If I have a lot of Zoom meetings and I can't get out, I'm going to make it work. But anyway, so it was that hard time. It was all those practices I put in place. I showed up in February. It was so January, I got the role. And then early February, we had our kind of executive meeting, the big meeting that the whole company was having. But I was running essentially product and engineering for a vertical. And I had to come in and present my plan for the year pretty fresh. So what at Salesforce, they call the V2 mom. And I worked with the people that were going to be working for me and some of my peers, got that thing in shape, and I nailed it. And it was a great presentation, a great vision. I felt really proud of what I have done. And to come from 2 months before I was ready to hang it all up, but I don't know what my plan was. That was just a really pivotal time in my career. A lot of lessons.
Yeah. Wow. It's funny when I had my reset moment, if you will, that when it shifted for me, I like rededicated to meditation, a new therapist, like all those things. So it's got to be something to it because it had a huge impact on me too. I'm actually going, not this weekend, but next weekend to a men's retreat with this group of guys in Hermosa Beach. We're doing like a meditation retreat. So yeah, I'm a big proponent. One of my advisors tells me, like, you shouldn't leave the house without meditating. That's what he tells me. Because I'm a better person if I meditate.
Absolutely. I think it's important, especially if you're going to really push yourself and grow as an individual, professionally, personally, understanding the nature of the mind. And it's not like this is anything. It's not like we're special, unique, right? We're human beings and we all can suffer from this. So spending time to understand the nature of the mind and I look at meditation like lifting weights, but for the brain, right? Because a lot of people will say, oh, I suck at it. The point is to, your mind's going to wander. That is the human condition. And the point is to catch it and bring it back to the present moment, right? And it's like doing a bicep curl for your brain.
I couldn't agree more. And I think it's, for me, it also became just stop for a second. For someone who can tend to be very busy and get in my head and be thinking, to just try to stop. And also the fact that I can pause and breathe, because I'll forget to breathe sometimes, like whenever. It doesn't need to be like in the morning or at night. I could just stop in the middle of the day. Now, it's a little harder when you have demanding tech jobs, but just like, sometimes I just need to like step away for a second. And when I do that, I'm usually more effective in the next moment.
Yeah. So. Really, it is accessible to anyone and everyone. I had gone through this program a couple of years ago, and it came in really handy when I joined BetterWorks, because I, again, felt, and here is another lesson, is no matter, I don't believe there are any quote unquote great leaders. You never get to the point that you're just great and you're always going to be. Every experience is going to challenge you in a new way. And what makes you ultimately successful is being willing to face that challenge head on, grow from it, learn from it, to always retain some amount of humility in that way. And so when I first showed up at BetterWorks, I was like, again, over my skis. And I was like, oh, but one of the things I learned from this program was this really, so you can use your breath, anything, there's a lot of ways you can get back to the present moment. And one of the ones he taught was touch. So to just rub your two fingers together and really feel it, like just like, especially if you pause and really just feel it, it's delightful. Try it when you're alone and not distracted. And so before a challenging meeting, I would just take a couple of seconds and just really feel, and the stress relief. I got value out of it just from doing it now. So it totally works. And so I was trying to teach the people on my team that as well, because I do think, depending on your role, you can, engineers like tend to always be thinking of what can go wrong, right? And so if you let that get carried away, it can be debilitating. And so that's definitely something I try to pass on to my team, because I believe fundamentally, and ultimately this is why I'm at BetterWorks, because the tagline, make work better, I fundamentally believe that work should be almost always a joyful experience. It's not always going to be. I've had to do hard things here that were not pleasant, that were difficult and hard, that tear me up, but that's okay. I know that's just part of what I have to do, part of navigating a startup in tumultuous times. It's not always going to be rosy, and that's where we all grow. But ultimately, with the right environment, right, and that it can really be a joyful experience. We spend a lot of time at work and with our coworkers, more than our families sometimes. So the worst is when you're in a culture, an environment that is inhumane, is how I describe it. And all I try to do is be a humane leader, is just think about the human on the other side of the equation.
Love it. Let's talk about that. At this point in the episode, Charlie, I do like to ask favorite book or literary piece or podcast, whatever, that you'd recommend to the listeners, either all time or that you've been reading recently, your choice.
That's great, because like I consume content voraciously. So anytime I get this question, I'm like, I don't know. I'm constantly listening to things and reading things. One of the books recently, and it's a kind of a, it's been around for a little while. It's maybe an oldie but goodie, and I initially got attracted to the title, because this idea had been in my mind. Personally, I have embarked on I've gotten really excited about weightlifting. And I used to lift a lot, in particular to facilitate whatever sport I was doing at the time. In college, I was a ski racer, so slalom, giant slalom. So I lifted, build muscle for that. The period of time that I was a kickboxer, I lifted. And then I had stopped. And then I had been reading a lot of just about how important it is, the older you get, to lift weights, weight-bearing exercises. And I was like, oh, I love weightlifting, so let's do it. So I had worked with a trainer. During the pandemic, I got a Tonal, which is a great machine, digital weights mounted on my wall right there in my office. But somewhere along the line, I just had decided that I want to see how far I can take this transformation. And it's one of those things where always in my mind, no matter how hard, I never saw that for myself. And especially a woman of my stage in life, you know, I'm not going to mention age. I don't need to do that. But, you know, I was around working in the 90s. So you can imagine you don't usually see that as the time to transform, but I've just decided that I want to do it. So I am really locked down and I'm going also to the gym so I can do heavy deadlifts, heavy squats. Like I'm having so much fun with this and so not afraid of hard work and so not afraid of those 2 rep max deadlifts that make my head spin. It's just so much fun.
I was just going to say that's badass. That's all.
It's fun. It's so fun. I'm having the best time and I can get really into these things. And then it has so much glow on the rest of my life professionally, because that's how I'm feeling. I'm like in beast mode, right? At work and professionally. And so anyway, the book was The Hard Thing About Hard Things. And it's really applicable for where I am now as a leader, C-suite in startups, because when I think back to that time at Salesforce, that 13 years, I was in middle management, right? And it was a company that was growing. And so the challenges I faced were challenges of growth. And it was great in that it really required me to step up and have to. I could have just stayed somewhere in the org and plenty of people do, and that's okay. But because I wanted to grow, I had to rise to the occasion all the time, right? So I was always looking for like, how do I elevate who I am and how I show up and how my work. That was a great experience. And now being in startups and sometimes things go awry, often they do. It's a very different, you are often doing hard things. So the book really useful, really resonates a lot of the messages. And there's a lot of overlap too with the work we do at BetterWorks. And as a leader, performance management, right? Just helping get the best out of everyone in tumultuous times as well. There's a lot of, Ben has a lot of great tidbits in there for folks in that space. So I think if you're a leader in a startup in particular, it's a real nice resource.
Yeah, this is the way I build my book list. So I'm definitely going to be checking it out. Cheryl, let's talk about BetterWorks. You're in this executive role, chief product and technology officer, right? Talk to me about your vision for the product, for the technology, based on the overall mission of the organization and maybe what you guys are working on, how that's taking shape.
So we're passionate about creating, helping with technology and the kind of programs around the technology, really fantastic work environments and cultures for people to show up and do their best ultimately and be impactful. So what we do is really about connecting business impact to performance and doing that for really large enterprises, which is more challenging, right, than maybe a startup environment where you have a smaller team. So right now we're very focused on sort of enterprise scale of capabilities, functionality, being able to adapt to very large organizations, but also very complex organizations that have complex needs. So there's a lot of maybe somewhat unsexy behind the scenes work going on right now to unlock more and more of that. The company's been around for a bit over 10 years, got started more in the SMB space. It's your typical trajectory. Salesforce went through the same thing. We were more SMB, grew into enterprise. So I've been on that journey before. So it's familiar and it's partly why I'm here too, right? Just having had that experience. How do we build what is going to meet the needs of our customers now, but also the folks that we want to be able to serve in the future as well? And we're really far along on that work. I joined almost 2 years ago. It'll be 2 years in January. So a lot of that effort is culminating now and unlocking like a whole new set of customers for us, which is super, super exciting. So we're trying to do that all while maintaining real consumer level ease of use in experience for the employee. We're selling to HR. We're selling for business impact, for building a performance culture that's aligned strategically to the organization. That's the vision that we're selling. But it does not work if the individual employee does not want to come in and use the software, if you have to force that. So there's a lot of effort to make the experience very streamlined, in the flow of work, intentional. And one of the things we're super passionate about and have been really focused on is leveraging AI to make that next level.
Does BetterWorks sit alongside Workday and Oracle and like these other kind of HRIS platforms? Is it like you guys are integrated to those platforms?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, we're integrated. Yeah, we're integrated with those platforms. Obviously, those platforms have a lot of this kind of functionality. It isn't always the areas that they're investing in. So maybe they've stagnated a bit. And that's really the kind of reason why we're a bit unique in that we can serve the same scale of enterprise, but we are solely invested in transforming performance, talent, and just uber focused on creating that real seamless experience for the employee. A lot of times those core HRIS systems are more built for the HR department, right, and employees don't love them necessarily. Yeah.
No, for sure. That makes sense to me. We've seen the same thing, and even in knowledge management or different areas like this, where, and not with HR systems, but with a CRM or a service desk, where that ends up being like something they can do, but sometimes there's better options, not to speak ill of any of the my friends at these other software companies, right? What about, since you've been there, some of the biggest challenges that you've faced since you've been at BetterWorks?
Yeah, definitely navigating through what it has been a little bit more of a couple challenging years. From there's been a lot of belt tightening. So that's been challenging, but I think we have done a great job of managing through that, and things are seeming to be shifting, which is exciting.
Did you guys have, I just like randomly thought of this, when you guys were developing, because like over the last 2 years, you went from like where you were and now you're serving enterprise customers. In developing that, did you guys have like an anchor customer that you were like collaborating with to develop a lot of those enterprise features? Was there someone you could kind of like an enterprise customer you could work with on that?
Hopefully we've had many. So this is the exciting part of it. And we've had many that are been so gracious in going on this kind of journey with us and partnering with us to get to this place. So we have a lot of insight in what our customers want to take it to the next level. And we are, you know, we listen very closely to them. We partner very closely with our customers and prospects. I'm in a lot of conversations with customers and prospects, really understanding what their needs are, making sure that we can deliver them in a way that really translates to the greater population. So a true SaaS movement from a product standpoint. We're not just doing individual one-off solutions. We're thinking about the broader landscape and what everyone needs. And we see a tremendous amount of alignment on what organizations need. So that's been really wonderful to see, in that we're all rowing the boat in the same direction at this stage. And it's the same whether we're talking about the more complex capabilities they want, right, from the back end, but also from the end user experience. So we have a lot of great feedback, and where we've revamped our user experience as well, and have just included lots of those tweaks that users have been wanting and asking for. So we're really excited to be able to deliver that. We're going to be delivering that over the next year, starting very soon this next year. So that's been great. And one of the most challenging things, and from a good way, has been how to bring AI into this space, into this audience, in a way that really, the way I look at it, honors the human and human resources, and isn't just a gimmick, and isn't just where we have AI too, but we've been trying to be extremely thoughtful and careful about how we're implementing AI, because we want it to be really impactful and not just something that we do this too, but really, I see so much value to AI and generative AI potentially, but we have to get it right. Because if we don't get it right, it can be a pretty negative experience.
It could be a detractor. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, especially for a solution like yours, right? The little that I know, just but thinking about it, I see how I really appreciate that you guys are being careful with it, because you are having an impact on these individuals, these humans, right?
I was going to say, I can give you one really clear example. So one of the things we have rolled out, which folks are loving, is our goal assist. because you're going to come in and create your quarterly goals. In the past, you would have had to just start, okay, what are my goals this quarter? So now we have an AI assist that will look at your last quarter's goals, your boss's current goals, your top company goals, your job title. And it just looks at all this information and proposes a bunch of professional and developmental goals for you. And it's in a second. And that is, users have loved that because they go from having to like, oh no, what am I going to do? To, oh, they just have to select what they want, tweak it, and move on. One of the areas that we haven't implemented AI yet, which we intend to, but are really just deep in thinking about it, is in calibration or talent review. So in a big company, maybe it's like a 9-box review. So where do your people fit? And yes, you could imagine having AI determine where your tens of thousands of employees fit, but this is really critical, important information. And you have to be really careful. One, I think, especially for a lot of our EMEA customers, they're not going to be cool with AI making those decisions. It just won't be allowed, right? So we know that, we understand that. We are always keeping the human in the loop of any of these use cases because a human has to take accountability for the decisions ultimately. But we do think that the AI is going to have the capability to look at way more information that you'll be able to look at and synthesize about each individual in your org. It'll be able to look at those kind of biases that might exist. Oh, maybe you have the group of managers that tend to, like, how do we normalize? So there's a lot of potential there for good, but there's also risk. So we're approaching that really carefully. And we will, before we put anything out there, would have made sure that we're managing the risks.
Yeah, for sure. Super cool. A couple last questions for you, Cheryl. One would be, in the HRIS industry, what do you think will be some of the biggest changes as time passes, or with the understanding that you don't have a crystal ball, like where do you see the industry going in the future, if you will?
Right now, there's so much talk and enthusiasm and energy around AI, but also skills and skill development, and seeing that everything changes pretty rapidly. And so you need to look at your talent as talent that you can evolve, that you can invest in, that will evolve if given the right tools, if given the right support. So there's a lot of energy there. And so we're putting a lot of energy there. One of the big question marks, and where I don't have a crystal ball, is ultimately the impact of AI to work today. There's a couple of elements from my standpoint. One is AI is a tool. There's an explosion of innovation. I was at an event last week. So this is through an investment that I'm a part of that's like Salesforce related. And there were a number of portfolio companies presenting really cool, innovative AI technology. And right now there's an explosion of innovation. And you can see a lot of different ways of interacting. Could be really embedded in the tools we already use, or it's like a chat interface, or it's a this or a that. And I think that we're still in this mode, and then it'll start to, the grooves will start to form, the sort of natural way. So I'm really eager to see what happens. Do we end up just in like chat interfaces all day or not? Unknown to me. I think it's probably more flow of work, more within the tools we use, if I were to make a bet. But then second is how much of what we do is going to be automated away. And then, yeah. And then what does that leave us to do? I have a 17-year-old who's applying to college, and I'm like, I don't know what to tell her. I just tell her to follow her passion at this point, because I wouldn't know where to guide her from. I think the jobs of the future don't exist. And I'm not much of a futurist, but I try to listen to some.
I think you nailed it too, like in that, and I was at the IBM innovation office a couple of days ago. They invited me over there, and they were presenting on some HRIS solutions, actually. They had developed something called Ask HR, and then there was the orchestrator, and it was very cool stuff. But some of the colleagues, these like CHR, whatever, CHROs, right? We were talking about how they're encouraging their staff to be open to upskilling, because people don't want to just fire people if they don't have to, right? What's next up? And like how, instead of people being like, oh, AI is going to take my job, to instead be thinking about, okay, AI can help with this. So what does that what can I do? How do I level up, right? And just coming at it from that mindset, I think is, I don't hear that all the time from just the masses, right? So I think more of that, less of the fear mongering will exactly. do everyone good.
Yeah, a little less of the fear. And it's interesting because like in education, and I get it, in education, you don't want kids going and just like having ChatGPT to do all their homework. I get that. But from my standpoint, and I think we'll figure this out, is that these tools should help us. One, it helps someone who's more junior in the career really up level much faster. So you see the biggest impact in performance from a more junior employee, like with coding copilots, for example. You get a ton more benefit if you're more junior because you're essentially getting all the lessons learned funneled through this copilot. And so it helps you just write code better, faster. Great. If you're super senior, you're going to get way less of a lift, but that's okay. So the way I look at it is these tools should level the expectation that we all have for each other. At a bare minimum, we know what you should all be capable of because of these tools. So what's next? So it should hopefully unlock that next level of whatever innovation is going to look like for us. Yeah, it's all fascinating and we'll see. It's a fun time. I've been saying that, and I'm still in the Bay Area, which is wild. And I've been saying that it's a fun time to be here because there's a lot of energy here now with OpenAI here and a lot of AI startups. And there's been a lull. So it's been nice to just feel the energy and be a part of what feels like something that's really exciting and transformational after a few years of kind of doldrums.
Yeah. I was just talking to this guy, Gaurav from Collective Health. They're out in San Francisco and he was ex-Apple, ex-eBay. And just the way he was talking about what they want to do is just, it's exciting. It's exciting. Now the promise is real and it's now. It's happening.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. And I've seen enough of missed, like where there's more hype than reality. And I'm a skeptic. I am such a skeptic when it comes to technology. And I see and I know, yeah, it's different now. This is real. This is meaningful and embrace it or you'll be left behind.
For sure. For sure. Great, great advice. This was awesome, Cheryl. Had so much fun. The last question I just like to ask all my guests is if you could go back 5, 10, 15 years in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
So for me, it's always been around trusting myself. I think you captured it actually, even the best way. It's like you learn to love yourself. And if I could go back and have and given that message to my younger self earlier, just when I think about how much anguish I could have avoided, because ultimately that's what it comes down to. Because if you, to be really, to show up authentically and as a leader or as an individual, it requires you to just really be good with yourself. And that's real graciousness. And when I think back to when I've been in my worst behavior as an individual is because I had a chip on my shoulder, because I thought I was maybe not worthy, because I had imposter syndrome. And ultimately I wasn't a good human being in that moment. And that has been the hard lesson. I wish there's some moments I wish I could go back and behave better. But ultimately it's like, you got to learn a lesson in your time. So yeah, if I could go back and just be like, learn to love yourself, honey.
I agree though. It takes what it takes, right? So thank you so much for taking the time today, Cheryl.
This has been great. I love that we've been able to weave tech and like all of that stuff with just really meaningful human discussion that I hope helps.
Thank you. That's like, we didn't anticipate that it would be like this when we started, but this is what it turned into and we're running with it. So thank you for your participation, and to our listeners, thank you all for tuning in, and we will catch you all next week.
Thank you for listening to the Disruptive Innovators Champions of Digital Business podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future episodes. This episode is brought to you by Disruptive Innovations, a leading tech consulting firm that helps enterprise organizations with their IT strategy, process optimization, and workflow improvement. Contact them and find out more at disruptiveinnovations.net.